ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
Bowl season is here, yet more coaching moves, and who really has an advantage when it comes to the college football playoff? This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, December 14th. Reese Davis, David Pollack, Taylor Schwenk, our producer, who has all kinds of personal Christmas problems that we will delve into by the end of this podcast. David?
You ain't lying. Hey, do you wake up and do your hair every morning? Like,
if I'm going to be on any type of video, yes. But you know, I've got the best toupee money can buy. It doesn't move much.
He's lying. He does not have a toupee.
I do not have a toupee.
I have seen some toupees in our business.
Yeah, there are some.
And yes. No judgment here, by the way. Maybe nope. Maybe one day I'll have to cross that bridge when I get to it. I just the hair is always ready to rock and roll. I know that. If you don't know this about Reese, Reese and Kirk for years on College Game Day have been appalled by my dressing manner. I mean, appalled. Like, kid, are you going to wear dress shoes? Like, do you have a belt? Kid, are you going to wear dress pants? Like, I mean, literally. But I would like to say that I'm one of the first ones. I don't know if I'm the first one, but the sneaker trend was definitely enhanced by me. I remember Kirk would be like, why are you wearing sneakers? Like, you're on the sidelines of games and you need to look professional. I'm like, hey, bud, comfort over style, bro. Always.
But there are dress shoes now that are comfortable, or pseudo dress shoes. You know, I don't want to plug anybody unless they're going to send me free shoes. But I mean, the leader in the industry with that is Cole Haan, and you have some of those. I think Samantha Ponder bought you some. No, wait, Sam bought you shoes because she lost some type of agreement to you. I bought you pants because you got $100 question right, and you were wearing near sweatpants in one segment of College Game Day a couple of years ago, and I'd had enough. Couldn't do it anymore.
He literally he knew he had to be smart with what he bought. So yes. He bought these. We don't say name brand.
I don't know. I just said one, so you might as well say the other one. I guess
you bought me some of these lemon pants. Yes. And I didn't realize that they made them for people that with large butts and legs, but that they do make them for 38 waisted individuals like myself that are a little larger. And but you knew you bought the sweatpant version, which was absolutely amazing. It was awesome because they are so comfortable.
They are good. You know, the thing is, I think to pull off the sneaker trend with suits, dress pants, you've got to either be a former athlete, like you at a high level. It doesn't mean you're just some schmuck that played in high school like all of us did. You got to be an elite athlete, or you got to be, or you can be a combination of that and be like really tall, like LaFonso and Jay Billis can both do it. Yep. You know, because they were both elite athletes and they're tall. So you can pull it off. You can't just have, you know, random guys wearing sneakers with suits. It just looks goofy, man. Put on some grown-up shoes. I was pleased that you put on grown-up shoes with your tuxedo, the semi-grown-up shoes with your tuxedo. Yeah,
Dorothy slippers.
It looked good, though. I've got to admit. I'll admit they look good.
Appreciate that. I think at some point we have to graduate at ESPN past the, you know, companies and businesses. And by the way, this is, I don't know why I'm going to go on a golf rant, but we don't have a lot to talk about today anyways. But golfing, like, if you let me wear a non-collared shirt, I would play more golf. Like, if you let younger generation be more comfortable, ESPN at our companies now, do we really need to be in suits still? Like, do we need suits and tie? Oh God, that's just because you like dressing up.
People that are bums
like me that don't like dressing up. I don't feel like we need to be all dressed up, like, to be in your living room. We're in your living room. We're just chilling with you in your living room, having a beer, having some turkey, drinking some soda with you, eating some. I mean, what, like,
there's a level there's a level of decorum that needs to be represented there that I think, to your point, I think it makes people feel comfortable, because when you dress for the occasion, it shows you mean business. I hate the college basketball trend where a lot of these guys aren't dressing anymore and they're wearing zips and all that.
I mean, show
some decorum. I'm not going to say respect for the game because that's silly. Just some decorum for the event.
Hey,
Show that you're serious.
Get off my lawn. Hold on. Somebody's on my lawn. Hold on a second. Get off my lawn, please.
Yeah. I'm just saying, man. Hey, look at our friend Desmond Howard. Have you seen how Desmond is going throwback and dressing to fly? When he gets on the airplane, he's going old school and dressing for it. I love it. I think it's great. Desmond and I, in fact, talked about next year. We're going to do like an Instagram thing where we each dress to fly. And, you know,
I'll be sure not to watch it or join. Thank you.
No, you might join. You're competitive. You'll want to outdress us at some point. You'll be going to some bespoke place in Atlanta going, hey, I've got to outdress these guys. Can you make me something that feels like a sweatsuit, but looks like I'm stepping right out of Mad Men from the 1960s?
Now we're talking. I'm just telling you, y'all should have seen when I first started on television, I dressed myself. And you talk about awful. Oh, my. I've always been the guy that I think like green on green goes together, blue on blue goes together. And my wife, she finally took over a couple of years ago to the point where, you know, I used to do Thursday night football. So I'd leave on Tuesday to do that Tuesday show. Wednesday, go to Thursday football, do Thursday, Friday, go to game day, Saturday. So I have to have, you know, three suits. And my wife knew it every time by the end of the week, I'm mix matching the suits that she put together. So she finally started using sticky notes. She finally started just like, sticking it on there.
Like adult Garaminals.
100% Garaminals. Yes. It was 1-1-1. And then we graduated to pictures. Like she would just take a picture of the suit. And so I would pull it up and be like, all right, I can't screw this up. This is the suit. But once she started dressing me, things went in a more positive direction. That's
you know, and one more thing about suits and then we'll talk football. We all do this, especially if you're a two suit weekend or if you've had like a long trip. If we're going to a place where you think you're going to wear your overcoat, though it's going to snow, you know, or it's going to rain the whole time. Well, you might think, well, I'm not wasting this suit on that. So you might go with the older, plainer suit. You might choose a tie that's not normally in the rotation. Still good, because I still think you ought to feel like you look great, but it might, you know, if you're wearing the overcoat and the scarf the whole time, then maybe you.
Well, and see, there's where we go. I think I just figured out where we depart and why we have such different philosophies. I think you just summed it up right there, because you said you want to feel great. I always feel great, whether I'm dressed up, whether I'm dressed down. I'm like, I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's go, baby.
Hey, you know what? It's my wife has a friend who thinks that because she always dresses, always. My wife does not leave the house unless she is put together and ready to go. That's because that makes her feel good. That makes, she feels like she's ready for the day, ready for the world. But she's got a friend who thinks she's uncomfortable and keeps telling her this is unnecessary. And she just nods. She's like, no, maybe for you. You know, for me, it's necessary.
My wife trains a bunch of her friends and a bunch of people in the community. And she trains at 5 a.m. 3 days a week. And same thing. And this girl comes decked out, makeup, hair, the whole nine yards, looking professional. I guess I'll take the sleep, but whatever. Okay.
No, I mean, hey, look, if maybe Deion said it right? Look good, feel good, play good, pay good. Right.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Hey, let me ask you, you're in the backyard of Georgia. The news started breaking Dan Lanning. Then they said it was premature. And then he eventually got the Oregon job. There are a couple of levels here. Young guy, 35 years old. Is this the right hire for Oregon? He's not just, you know, a guy from the South, but, you know, it's a departure a bit. What do you think of the hire? I know you think he's a terrific coach. What do you think of the hire for Oregon?
You know, it's kind of like the way, you know, I feel about Notre Dame. I would say love the individual. Think the individual, you know, Marcus. I'm talking about Marcus Freeman from Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman's 35 years old. Love them. Love the gravitas. Love the energy. Love the way they hold people accountable. The way they coach defense. I don't know if they're ready. And you know, Cristobal's left that place in a good place. I'll say that, you know, do I think Cristobal's a slam dunk higher at Miami? I don't. But do I think he left Oregon better than he found it? I 100% think he did. So you'll have talent. I think Dan will jive with the guys really, really well. But again, all of this success that you see by a lot of people, you know, there's not a lot of Nick Sabans out there. You better hire and assemble a great staff. And I know he's going to take several. When Mel Tucker left, he took half the building. You know, he took a ton of people with him. When there's a bunch of GAs and a bunch of people, analysts and people that they're ready for a shot, they want to go get paid, that he'll probably take with him and fill out his staff. I think the staff around him will have a lot to do with the success he has. I know he's a good defensive mind. I know he's a good defensive coach. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's a slam dunk and they're going to go win Pac-12 championships. When I'm at Oregon, that has been the premier job, by the way, in the Pac-12 for the last 10 years, 12 years. Like, this isn't new. USC's way behind Oregon when it comes to recent success and recent history. So, I thought it was interesting. Chip Kelly, you know, got some run for maybe possibly coming in and running it back. I think Dan's a good coach. He's a young coach that still has a lot to learn. And you're getting a job like Oregon. But this is why Dan Lanning waited. And I'll give him credit. I'll give him props. Like, Dan Lanning has been offered jobs in the past couple of years, and he was going to go the Kirby Smart method. He was going to pick his job that suited him, that he thought he could go in and win. And my God, Oregon as a first-time head coaching job, that's a dang win.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think the hire, I like the vision of the hire. Generally speaking, and there are always exceptions to rules, generally speaking, I don't like running it back. But in this particular case, Chip Kelly running it back at a place he knew and stocked with players, which is the part that Chip doesn't particularly seem to care for in terms of going out and recruiting, that would have made sense to me here. But Lanning is more of a long-term play. It is more, you know, and there is some risk associated with it. I agree with you. Just as there's risk associated with Marcus Freeman. I like both of them. I think they're good. I want to ask you one more question about Lanning, but I want to throw this in too. I spent some, you know who the next guy is on the young defensive coordinator who is absolutely going to be a head coach soon? I was wrong about Brent Venables. That took 21 years. It won't take the next guy, I'm about to say, 21 years. Mike McDonald at Michigan.
Yeah.
Man, I tell at the Heisman weekend, I spent some time talking to him, like probably 20, 25 minutes. And it wasn't, you know, just drilling down into his philosophy, but background and talking. You want to talk about an impressive dude and someone who's gotten serious results. He's next. You know, I don't know when it'll happen, but that's going to be, he's going to become a candidate places in the not too distant future.
Well, and you've seen a shift now. Like it, back in the day, it used to be you had to earn your stripes and you had to go be a DC for 10 years and you had to go have a lot of success and a long track record. You know, you look at Sean McVay, the dude's still 20 years old, for God's sake. So, I mean, you know, just you've seen the youth movement, whether it's Staley in the NFL and McVay and those guys, like you've seen that. And now the college movement, you've seen the same thing. It's not, can you lead people? You know, can you stand up in front of the people with credibility and lead them and they listen to you? And you don't have to be a coordinator for 10 years to be able to do that.
Right. And some of it is innate. Bob Stoops didn't need it. It appears that Lincoln Riley hasn't needed it. So sometimes guys are just able to do it. Kirby Smart has been on the other end, being the guy who is leaving as he went through a playoff thing. Now he's on the Nick Saban side of it, where Saban has done it time after time after time, losing coordinators at the end of the season, the distractions. I know they've got Muschamp right there. So a lot of the safety net was already built in for Georgia. But it's something that will have an impact and Georgia will have to manage. Is that fair in the playoff game against Michigan?
100%. Listen, when you got there's no way to put it. When you have two jobs, you're less focused on one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way to put it. And Dan Lanning is going to have two jobs. But I tell you what, the offseason hire that we haven't talked enough about this year was Muschamp. I mean, to be able to bring in a guy, I mean, just think about sitting in a room, Dan Lanning, up and coming, young guy, learned football at a different time. Will Muschamp, been around the block and coordinated great defenses at different spots, has been in different conferences all over the place. Kirby Smart, like, you've got three defensive minds that have seen every freaking thing you can throw at them. And now when you game plan and you're bouncing it off of one guy and another guy, like, you know how easy it is to be a great DC when you've got great minds collaborating all throughout a week and saying, I would do this and I would do that. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I think bringing in Will has really, really helped this defense. And it's been interesting to see Will too, by the way, because we all know Coach Boom and, you know, his personality. Well, he had to run anything. He's not the CEO anymore. So he just sits back with his little specs and he, you know, clicks them together and, you know, just kind of offers his 2 cents here and there. The guys love him, but he hasn't had to be the same, you know, crazy intense guy. He's let Kirby do most of that stuff. And so I think it's a great safety net. I do think they'll be just fine. I think that what we lose sight of sometimes when we talk about guys going to get new jobs and new opportunities, there's something to that ring, bro. There's something to getting that ring and being the last man standing. And you know, Dan Lanning's taking that Oregon job and he wants all that. He doesn't know if he's going to get a shot at it. He doesn't know if he's ever going to get a chance to chase the ring again. And one thing I know about Dan is a competitive sucker. He is competitive as crap. So I think this staff will be just fine. And if they lose, it ain't going to be because Dan Lanning's distractions.
And I also think, David, having watched this at a number of places over the years for, and there are exceptions, obviously, but primarily there is such pride in performance that someone leaving thinks, you know, well, you know what? They're not going to say that about me. You know, I'm not going to be the guy that they say, you know, was sloppy in game plan preparation or sloppy in execution, or I was distracted or I didn't spend enough time in the building. You know, it's going to be taxing and he owes it to Oregon to do what he has to do for them. But he also owes it to Georgia to do the best job he possibly can. If that means even doing a little bit more, spending a little bit more time just to ensure that the guys know, that the players know. I know he's built the credibility with them, but anytime somebody's leaving, it's human nature. Is he with us? And most coaches, most people, most humans, you know, they don't go forget this when you leave a job. You know, I mean, unless maybe you get fired and you're trying to get back at him, get some type of revenge. But if you are leaving of your own volition and you are working out a certain period of time, you want to be excellent because you're like, they're not going to say that about me. They're not going to say good riddance to me. And I think that'll serve him well also.
So this is one of those pods that we have more time. So I'm going to take advantage of this. So I want you to take me inside the Lane Kiffin debacle a couple of years ago and what happened to him when he got fired, when he was on his way out, like, And what he was already, where was he going to? He was already leaving to be head coach, right?
Yeah. He was going to FAU.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of verified stories there, but I think that there was a feeling that he didn't manage that as well. And I don't think it's because he didn't care. I think he cared very deeply because he brings that up so often now, you know, in retrospect that I think it hurt him. You know, he doesn't like to show that, as you well know. He's not a guy who, you know, pulls us to the side and starts sharing his deepest feelings. That's not who he is. But I think it hurt him. And it hurt him because of what we were talking about pride and performance. But there was a feeling that the distractions and the demands of both were too much. And, you know, that was there's only one coach on the planet who could have gotten away with that with relatively little criticism, because, you know, there are a couple of things about that game. And we're talking about the 2016 national championship game when Lane Kiffin was removed. Sark was an analyst and stepped in and called plays for the championship game. He'd been around, but he hadn't been dealing with Jalen Hurts, who was a freshman. I don't have the box in front of me, but I think Alabama was like 2 for 13, 14 or 15 or something on third down, couldn't convert a third down. You know, they kept their defense on the field. They sort of, when Bo Scarborough got hurt, they went away from the run. And then once they, and they kept their defense on the field and they wore out. And that's how Deshaun Watson was able to engineer that comeback in the fourth quarter. People forget because they scored all the points. Clemson had through like 80 plays against the Alabama defense, had 14 points. You know, they'd done a really good job against it. And then they wore out. You know,
I remember the halftime of that game.
Yep.
Alabama was down. And I felt very good of where Clemson was at just because of that. They had run so many plays, and I was like, dude.
No, Alabama wasn't down, were they at halftime?
No. Alabama was up.
I thought you said down.
Clemson was down. I'm sorry. But I felt very comfortable where they were because I'm like, dude, they've run a lot of plays. This is this is their recipe. Because they weren't a physical mall-you team, but they could go tempo, and Deshaun could scramble and get a first down, and that was the helicopter game when he got hit in the circle, right? And the helicopter for a first down, wasn't it? Or was that?
No, I think, it might have been. I can't remember if it was that one or the year before, but I do remember the halftime. And I remember you saying that. And it was a great mid-game point because even though the score certainly wasn't out of hand by any stretch of the imagination, Alabama had felt like in the first half that they were the better team. So the reason we're reliving this is because of that. Now, nobody will ever know if it might have gone the exact same way if Lane had stayed. The game might have been exactly the same. But there's always that question. And that's what will happen with Dan Lanning, depending on how it goes. Kirby was able to, as I recall, I think the previous year, Kirby was leaving for Georgia and, Clemson scored a lot of points, but Alabama won the game. He went out, he went
Clemson
out a winner there.
Scored a ton of points. Good Lord.
Yeah. So they scored a lot, but he went out a winner. So ultimately that's what we'll decide. There will be questions if Georgia doesn't win the national championship, unless the defense plays great, and then there obviously won't be any. Before we move on, two things I want to mention. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Or listen to the show as a podcast and listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones. New episodes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You can follow The Right Time wherever you get your podcast or watch the show on YouTube. You've been listening to Christmas music since probably Halloween.
Correct.
Favorite Christmas song?
Oh. Man, that's so tough. And there's so many versions of everything now.
Do you do categories like serious, spiritual, really the true meaning of Christmas, fun, and then maybe just the music that you like? They're like categories of Christmas music to me.
I have them all mixed together, but yeah, I got the Perry Como old school. I got Mariah Carey. I got, Third Day. I got Chris Tomlin. I mean, I got Michael Bublé. I got Ariana Grande. Like, I got hip hop Christmas. We were listening, me and my son this morning, my son and my daughter and a couple of friends were working out before school this morning early, and we're in the gym, and my son was like, hey, can we play some hip hop Christmas? And I was like, sure. So we Christmas and Hollis. And, but I guess you got to go. Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas is probably the one that you got to play. You just got to play it a lot, but I got to hear them all, bro.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm sort of the same way. Got a lot of stuff on the playlist. My daughter put together the Davis Family playlist, and it is eclectic to say the least. But
Pentatonics on there?
Yes, Pentatonix is on
there.
Got to
have Pentatonix.
Dean Martin, because of my 24-year-old son. He and his girlfriend recently watched on YouTube or wherever it was, like one of the old Dean Martin Christmas specials. He said it was amazing. So it was like really, real, really cool, old school.
Well, Christopher's also an 80-year-old man in a 24-year-old body. So
it's in an elite athlete's 24-year-old body. I'll tell you that.
No, if y'all haven't met Christopher, by the way, Christopher's a freak of an athlete, or we could say first guy in, last guy out, hard worker.
Oh yeah.
On the field.
Yeah. When he hears this, he's going to be giving you a call.
Oh, Christopher,
he's had enough of that.
Christopher, I respect your work ethic so much. Always in the weight room, always listening to coaches. You go above and beyond. Your motor never stops.
You better get ready for a call if he hears this.
All the Cooper Cup from last night, throw out there.
Yeah, he's heard it all. There's even a write up recently in their season preview that. How about good?
Yeah.
How about strong and fast, powerful? Okay.
Explosive, whatever.
Yeah. How about this? I had to do a sponsored thing a week or so ago, actually, when we were in Vegas.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. Okay. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that's not why I said it, but they had a great idea that they challenged me to that I'm about to challenge you to.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Taylor, you're going to need to chime in on this to tell me, because I've got to watch and make sure that he gets it right. I can't do the stopwatch and then see if he gets it right. How many bowl games, not matchups, how many bowl game names can you do in 1 minute?
Oh, I would say like 10.
You ready to go?
I haven't looked at a bowl game. All right.
Some of them are easy. You can do more than 10 because you can go Rose Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Sugar Bowl, the Chick-fil-A Bowl. Okay. So Taylor's going to put a minute on the clock and I'm going to say go and you just start.
Okay.
You ready? Okay. Yep. Taylor, start the clock. Go.
Rose, Peach, Sugar, Fiesta, Orange, Cotton. Is the VRBO Bowl still a bowl? Is the New Era Pinstripe still a bowl?
I think that's the wrong sponsor, but yes, there's still one.
Alamo Bowl. Crapola. Peach Bowl.
You already said that.
Oh. I already said cotton. crap.
Come on, man. No, you're right. And by the way, it still is New Era. Sorry, New Era. Go ahead.
See, you said one the other day on set. God, I'm missing half of the bowls in this common world here.
10 seconds.
You got 10 seconds.
Music City Bowl.
There. Yep.
Son of a biscuit.
No, that's not a bowl.
Time's up.
Hey, you at least know yourself well. I counted 10.
Yes. I bet you got at least 15, 20.
I got a few more, but when the pressure's on like that, it changes a little bit. Like there's the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Oh, I should have known that.
Yeah. Yeah. That one. There's a
Citrus Bowl.
Yeah. Well, that was the, that you mentioned that sponsor, and asked if it was still a bowl. There's the Birmingham Bowl. There's a First Responder Bowl. Liberty Bowl was an easy one to get. San Diego County Credit Union, now Holiday Bowl. It used to be Poinsettia. You and I might have done that together, yeah. Poinsettia Bowl a couple of times.
I think we did a Poinsettia Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. And then, you know, now it's a little different. I used to like the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. Now it's the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl. But the Poe and Weed Eater Bowl was the best bowl name of all time.
Poe and Weed Eater?
Remember the Poe? It was the Independence Bowl at Shreveport. It was the Poe and Weed Eater Bowl for a few years.
And that's why I don't know the names, because they change very frequently, it seems.
Right, exactly. I think that was the point of the exercise. Is there a game prior to Christmas that you're looking forward to, even just prior to the playoff, one particular bowl matchup? I know you're going to watch them all, but.
Yeah, I think people would be interested to know that, like, we literally don't talk about anything before we go on air, which is amazing.
I think that's pretty obvious.
all the rabbit holes we go down. It's pretty interesting. So before New Year's one, you said,
yeah.
When does Oklahoma State play?
I think that is like maybe the 30th or somewhere in there. Let me see. I'm scrolling. Oh, no, that's New Year's Day. That's New Year's Day. It's a PlayStation Fiesta Bowl, Oklahoma State and Notre Dame.
Okay.
And
then Ole Miss is in the.
Yeah, that's New Year's also. That's New Year's night.
Also.
Baylor and Ole Miss. Yeah. So you're interested in those, and the rest of them, you'll just take them as they come. What about Clemson and Iowa State? You know, we're talking about Kirby having to deal with this. Dabo is like having to restructure a lot. Brent took a long time administrator with him too to Oklahoma, a guy who was really instrumental in helping create Dabo World there with the facility. So there's a lot of change at Clemson. And you know what? All those guys were great and they were great together, but sometimes you need a little freshness. And I think maybe after this season that Clemson had, that this might be really, really good for them. And Dabo already has a really, really good idea, even though he was laughing, saying that when I announced my defensive coordinator hires, and if he did the last couple of days, I've missed it. But he had told me that when he does it, he shared who it's going to be. But he said, they'll say, oh, Sweeney's crazy. Can't believe he's doing that. But he's really, you know, he felt really good about it, but it'll give them a fresh energy. I think it could be good for Clemson.
Oh, I think
and them and Iowa too. State, I want to see them play. I think
it's good for them because, you know, things do get stale. You do have to reinvent yourself. Listen, I think Tony Elliott's one of the finest individuals we've ever spent time with. Like, he's just a great dude. I'll say this, though. I think their offense was very player driven. It wasn't very scheme driven. I think they could find better, maybe a newer offense that's more driven around having different packages, having different things that you do really well and adjusting and, you know, maybe more throwing more routes than just the something that, like Clemson. If you watch them, they don't attack the middle of the field very often. They're letting their receivers win on the outside. So you can play them a certain kind of way. Now, listen, when they got freaks out wide that win, it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. When you got a scrambling quarterbacks that they've had, like Trevor and Deshaun, that have been so great, Taj Boyd, you know, they've been great in the run game. So I'll be interested to watch. And here's another thing too. Dabo might love that guy. That's his analyst that he's been talking about for years. It's also a different animal when you're running the show. Mm-hmm. And it can be more difficult. Again, kind of like we went back to Will, Dan, and Kirby. Like, now you're the guy. Now those ideas don't come from Brent and somebody else and you're putting them together. Now it's you, and you got to find somebody else that you trust to put together. But I told you week four or week five, if Dabo didn't evolve, I don't think Clemson would be where they've been. I think he has to change what they've been doing a little bit. And this will make him do that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. This is going to force him to, you know, maybe become different. I guarantee you he'll become more transfer portal team. He has to, when you lose that many kids to the transfer portal. And I respect the heck out of what Dabo says and why he says it. Like, he wants to build all in. He wants to build culture. Dabo's the best in the country, arguably, at building culture and love for the game and passion. And, you know, I think the transfer portal robs you of some of that. You definitely, you know, all those guys you brought in that you're saying, hey, work for me. And then I bring somebody in to replace you. Like, there's a connotation to that. Here's another thing to think about, too, with the transfer portal. Most players are in the transfer portal for a reason. Okay, so Michigan State lived off of transfers this year, lived off of new guys. You aren't going to get that very often. A lot of times there's warts, there's scars, there's a reason that somebody's in the transfer portal. And listen, more and more there's not. Like Quinn Ewers, he's gone after 1 year for didn't even get a chance to show you anything when he went to Ohio State and then, you know, transferred now, I think, going to Texas reporting. So, you know, I just think you can't build your whole team like that, but you see the supplementation of Alabama with Jameson Williams, you know, Alabama with Henry To'o, you know, Kirby Smart going and getting DK from Clemson starting at corner, like, for them. I think you got to find those guys and supplement, but I think Dabo will be more willing, but it will be fun to watch. The greatest thing I've ever seen in sports about Nick Saban is his ability to find new coaches. It's unbelievably stupid. It's exhausting, Reese. Think about how exhausting it is every year to be replacing somebody over and over and over again. And the dude just, okay, let's go here. I mean, to think about that staff they had a couple years ago with Napier and Kiffin and Sark. And I mean,
Mel Tucker and Kirby, it's
Kirby. It's embarrassing. I mean, it's unbelievable to look. Yeah, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, no doubt. One last thing on the transfer portal. I'd heard for weeks about mid-season that Bo Nix was possibly going to do that. And I did not think that his heart would let him. I was surprised. I understand why he's about to be on his fourth offensive coordinator. He's going to be anyway, but maybe the time had come. And you know me, I always respect the player's ability to choose where they want to play. I understood the intellectual side of it. I did not think the emotional side would allow him to do it. I was surprised.
No transfer portal shocked me more than him, because and nothing is more indicative of where college football is at than that, because that dude grew up orange and blue, war eagle. Dad played there. Like, his dream was to play at Auburn. I think that, I don't know. I mean, take it whatever it is, but this is disturbing for Brian Harsin's supporters. This is disturbing for Auburn and their culture. When you get that kind of guy who has that kind of passion and love, but which, by the way, is not normal. That's not today's college football. Your daddy's college football. That's old school college football. To have a guy like that, who, you know, I think he was the number two rated quarterback in the country when he came out, five star, all in on your, on who you are and what you are, leave your program. I don't think that says great things for Auburn and for their future. Do you think he reunites with Gus, by the way?
I do not. No, I will be. That will be two surprises if he does that. I do not.
They've got an awesome relationship, I know, with the family and stuff, but I see Bo Nix going somewhere. And dude, what he showed me this year after he got benched and improving, you know, he takes another step with it. All he's missing is his mechanics. Mm-hmm. If he just continues to quiet his feet and understand how to take something off the passes that he throws 9,000 miles an hour every single time, that dude, with his mobility and creativity and playmaking, he could have a special, special season next year.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes. It'll be interesting to see who Lane Kiffin chooses. After Spencer Rattler went to South Carolina, which initially was a shock, and then you stop to think about it, and Shane Beamer's such a great recruiter and has such a good rapport with players. He was in Oklahoma, you know, so him and Stogner both made a lot of sense.
That's still a shock to me, dude.
It is me too. But in retrospect, it wasn't as much as I was like, whoa. And then I thought, well, you know, that's a relationship driven thing, I think.
And you wonder, in full disclosure,
and also a guarantee thing, David, because there's no way he doesn't play. No, there's correct. No way he doesn't play.
Well, they're taking GAs off the sidelines their last year and playing them at quarterback. So that, you know, it's interesting to me that you're talking about that was Mel Kiper's number one pick coming into this next season, like the number one quarterback in the country. And it's interesting to hear these kids and where they choose and why they choose, because I'm different. You're different. He's different. Everybody has different things they're looking for, but like, you go to South Carolina, you're pretty positive you're not going to win at a high level. So, you know, Spencer Rattler, how do you're going to handle a lot of adversity. I think one of the things that people questioned about him was handling adversity. I think he has a chance to go and show what he's made of and show some toughness and show some leadership. What I want to see from him is leadership. I want to see him be the guy, like drive the engine, talk the talk, walk the walk, communicate. And I think he'll have a chance at South Carolina to show all those things.
You know what? That's a great point. Now, I'll wrap it on this, because I remember hearing Saban talk about the counsel and Jalen Hurts talk about the counsel he received from Saban and about where Jalen might go when he did his graduate transfer. And he said, where are the best players around you? And Jalen said, I think Oklahoma. He said, well, then you should go to Oklahoma. But your point is a great one, in that everyone has different answers or different questions they have to answer. And for Spencer, it's the things you talked about. So necessarily, just showing you can throw the ball to great players, that's probably not really in question with him. The other stuff is. And if you go to South Carolina and you elevate them, and you're doing it with a head coach that you are comfortable with, makes a lot of sense. I wish him well. You know, he's gone through a lot. He probably has some growing and improving to do, as we all do. And, you know, I wish him well. So, David, as we wrap up, I want you to remember this one simple precept, and your time with me will not have been ill spent. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
You're wrong.
No, it's not a Christmas movie. It's
okay.
It's an action movie set at Christmas. There are some family components, but it's not a Christmas movie.
So, set at Christmas. You just said it's set at Christmas. It has Christmas music. It has a Christmas party.
That's ancillary.
It's centered around a Christmas party. I mean,
it's centered around a Christmas party. Yeah. It's an action movie. It's centered around Bruce Willis killing bad guys. That's what it's centered around.
Bad guys that took over the Christmas spirit and the Christmas party.
No. They took over the money.
You can't come steal the Christmas party and the Christmas spirit. He's basically killing those guys for the Christmas spirit is what he's doing. It's a Christmas movie.
No,
I do this with my wife every year. You're wrong.
That's a beautiful suit, Mr. Pollock.
If you look it up, it's in the holiday. It's in the holiday section when you go to Christmas movies.
Then it's a mistake. It's a mistake. That's a beautiful suit, Mr. Pollock. Did you get it in London? I hear Arafat has a couple of them.
Yeah, well, it's a Christmas movie.
I could sit here and talk about...
My wife is sitting behind me right here shaking her head. No, it's not, because we have this debate every year. Every year,
She's
25
right.
days of Christmas, Christmas movies, the Christmas greatest, special, you see Die Hard.
But it shouldn't be there.
What's the greatest Christmas movie?
It's just trolling, huh?
What's the greatest Christmas movie?
It's a Christmas story. It's not even close. It's about a little kid who wants a BB gun. And the lengths he will go to get it, huh?
I've still never seen that. That's crazy.
Dude. I want a Daisy Red Rider, carbine action, 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass and a thing that tells time.
I still think It's a Wonderful Life. Gino made me watch it a couple years ago.
It's awesome.
Good.
You and I can't watch that very often. If we do, we're in puddles,
bawling, tears. Tears.
Hey, look! I cried a Christmas story when he goes to sleep at the end of the movie, clutching his BB gun. It's amazing. Anyway, David, it's been fun, man. I think
we'll do this
again. But,
yippee-ki-yay,
all right, man. We're out.
See ya.